Almost Relevant, Episode 9.
Hello and welcome to the Almost Relevant podcast, where we something about rabbit holes. I don't know, daylight savings. I'm tired. I'm Elliot Lee.
And I'm Jeremy Collier, and that's delve into any rabbit hole, no matter how deep.
Things that are nerdy and geeky.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm tired.
You know what? It's episode 9.
I've been doing this
a long time now.
I've been up since, what, 5:30?
Well, yeah, including daylight saving time, you got up about 4:30. And that is because we went to FogCon today. It's a local convention.
What does that stand for again?
That stands for Friends of Genre Convention.
Okay, because I'm going to assume not every single one of our listeners will know
what that is. I was going to say, it takes place in Walnut Creek every year. This is the fifth year. And to be a little more specific about it, it's a literary convention. This year's theme, it has a theme every year. Last year was mystery. This year was The Traveler. And basically, it's under the idea that there's two types of stories. One where the hero leaves their home and goes on a journey, and one where a strange traveler comes into town.
Okay, so to be a little more specific, since you said last year it was mystery, so this year is more like science fiction, right?
I'm guessing, well, from what I heard about last year, it's always science fiction and fantasy. This one tended to go, you're right, a little more towards science fiction.
Okay.
Which I was really surprised about. And I wonder how it was for the other 2 days. We only went to one day of the convention, the last day. I wonder how it was for the first 2 days, if there was some more fantasy elements, or if it was, I don't think it was purposely sci-fi, but definitely what we saw today was sci-fi. I mean,
well, also, but before we delve into this rabbit hole, anything new going on? Because, you know, that we normally kind of touch on that first.
You'd think it'd been a long time since we recorded the way we're recording this. It's only been a week.
Yeah.
Going on new.
That movie was so bad. Oh, my God.
If you don't know what he's talking about, see our last episode, if you're over 17, where we talked...
So bad.
Where we talked to... where we talked about 50 Shades of Grey, the book, the novel,
as well as about healthy BDSM.
Yeah, with Autumn
Lokerson.
Lokerson, thank you. Because ever since I pronounced it right when off the air last
time. No, you know, we just have such a strong bond that we finish each other's
sandwiches.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So Autumn was on our last episode. Definitely a good episode. I had a lot of fun, but it is rated adult, definitely. But this episode is a little more lighthearted. We're going to cover a little bit about the convention that we went to.
So, back to what I was saying. Yeah. What's new, Jeremy?
Well, I had already said...
Because we're already kind of moving on. No, new with you.
I know, I already said not much. I can't really think of anything that's really new with me. Edging towards spring break, so I get a week.
Oh, God. I can't wait for spring break.
I get a week and a day, so basically what's equivalent to, what, 10 days off of work. So that's nice.
Yeah.
And as soon as I get back to work, actually this is new, as soon as I get back to work, I'll be taking up an additional 3 classes a week, so that's going to be a lot of work. For 5 weeks only, though, so it's not a big deal. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm going to be working with some students I haven't had a chance to work with in a classroom setting before. So that's actually, I'm really looking forward to that. But what I'm really looking forward to is just 2 months after we get back from spring break is the end of the school year. And I'm done! Just don't tell my boss that.
Which, presumably, you will tell by the time we air this episode, which I also assume she doesn't listen to.
No, she hasn't listened to any episode, and hopefully she's not listening to this one.
That's how she's gonna find out.
Yeah, that's how she's gonna find out. She goes, Jeremy, I heard it. No. Anyway, how about you, Elliot? What's new with you?
You know, kind of a similar boat. This quarter just needs to end. It's been... The last few weeks have been pretty brutal. I don't think I've ever worked this hard academically in my life. And it's gotten to the point where, like, I've been just so immersed, I guess is the best way I could put it, just so immersed with school, that when I was on the phone with my brother, I don't remember exactly how the topic came up, but he kind of threw out the idea about getting a new car, mm-hmm. but I don't have the, you know, the credit history to really get a loan for that. So he mentioned that, you know, the parents will probably have to co-sign for it. I'm like, co-sign? What, like, adjacent over hypotenuse? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, that kind of co-sign. Okay.
Well, you know, we were talking about it earlier this morning, and you realize that you didn't come my way in all of February, because we live about an hour away from each other. You didn't come my way in February at all. Mm-hmm. The last podcast we actually recorded was in January, and then I got sick. Well, before the
okay, last one that we did here.
Sorry, last one we did here was January, and then up until last weekend, we hadn't even seen each other because I was sick for 2 weeks, and then I was busy week. Shut up. And you, when I tried to talk to you 1 week, you're like, yeah, I can't talk. I'm doing math. I'm like...
Not even just math. It's just, all my classes. Well, I was just busy. I have papers I have to do. I've 20-ish pages to read. And, you know, it's not something... Generally, reading that I could just skim. It's something I actually have to, understand.
Well, I remember it was funny, because at that point, when I had sent you a message, I was like, so, how's school going?
Busy, can't talk.
Yeah, you're busy, can't talk. I'm doing math. And I'm like, or not, you didn't say I'm doing math, but it's something like to that.
No, extent. I'm pretty sure math is easier for me to take a break from and to, talk for a minute. But
you had said you did math 8 hours or something like that day, for that day, or 6 hours that day?
That's a possibility,
And it was right in the middle of that,
because I had a midterm that week, which I didn't do very well on, but it doesn't really matter, because if I didn't get at least an A on it anyways, my final will cover that, or, would have made the difference anyways.
Yeah, and,
assuming it happens. I mean, the final.
Yeah, as long as you pass the final, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't like trigonometric functions.
I don't know what they are,
Well, if I were also to ever get a car, I needed to get my parents to adjacent over the hypotenuse.
Yeah.
The lease.
Alright, so back to FogCon.
Anyways.
So FogCon, again, is a Friends of Genre convention, and you could guess they tend to focus on the genre side of literature, very little in the way of literary fiction, which, if you don't know, literary fiction is your more standard, it's your more what you read in school, like Fahrenheit 451 came to mind for some reason, that's more literary fiction. So
more on the academic level, would you say?
More of what is considered good, what is considered, educational, Catcher in the Rye. Those are all literary fiction.
Them phonies.
Yeah. Oh, and a good book. I did finish it, but...
Didn't you listen to it?
Yes, I did listen to it on my way to work and back. But anyway, so this does focus more on your, your mystery, your thrillers, your fantasy, your sci-fi, and everything kind of in between there. As I said, last year they focused on mystery, but even then I heard that the panels were focused on mystery, most of them, but somehow it always comes back to sci-fi and fantasy. And I think that's because you can, in a lot of ways, you can fit any other genre into sci-fi and fantasy. You know, you have your two settings. You have your fantasy and you have your sci-fi. If it takes place in the future, and you can have ones that are fantasy and sci-fi, but if it takes place in the future with technology, it's generally sci-fi. If it takes place in the past or in a different world with no technology, it's usually fantasy. So now,
if anything, then that's not really a genre. It's more of a setting.
It is. It's both, yeah. Because, I mean, definitely there's epic fantasy. That's mm-hmm. a genre. You know, you have your elves and your warriors and your axes and your swords. And then you have space opera, which is a type of sci-fi where it's as they were talking about today, throw physics and the laws of reality out the window. We're going to travel, galaxies in a matter of minutes. All the warp drives, yeah. So this one, today we ended up going to two panels. I will name the panels real quick. Do you have them? Because I don't have my notes up yet.
So, Generation Ship.
The actual was We Are the Ones Who Only Travel.
Okay, well, yeah, just my notes were Generation Ship and Getting Around the Speed of Light.
Yeah. So, Let's start off by just kind of specifying, what did you think about the con itself? It was... Hold on. Let me take one more step back. The con was pretty small. It took place in, as I described it, the basement of a hotel.
Yeah. It's definitely not what I imagined it to be. I imagined it to be, like, I want to say at least 2 or 3 times bigger.
Me too.
At least. But it's just like, it just felt like a small gathering.
Yeah.
Like a little small community event.
I mean, I think there was only, maybe 50 to 100 people there today?
Oh, let's see. Max? The first panel.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so I can actually, going back in my head, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
This makes great podcasting.
9.
Okay, while 10, you're doing that, I'll explain 15, a little bit. So, in the...
About 17 or 18 people in the audience, including us.
Yeah. And what I mean by the basement of a hotel, it's actually the conference area at a Marriott. You do go down 2 flights of stairs, and it's pretty spread out. I mean, it's a spacious area.
Yeah, the janitor kept coming in and get brooms and stuff and mops.
They had 4 conference rooms on one side, and then on the other side, I think there was actually 4 on that side, even though we only went to one of them.
Sounds about right.
We ended up going to 2 panels that... Okay, there's a lot more than panels there. There's writing workshops, there's readings, and things like that. We just happened to be interested, because this was our only day there, we wanted to get the most out of our money and the most out of our time, so we went to panels instead of, you know, like, book readings of authors we'd never heard of.
Got a lot of free shit, too.
Yeah, and the freebie table was awesome. They had a freebie table when you first come there, and literally, it was about 10 different books, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
10 to 12 different books that you could basically take for free. And it encouraged you not to take all of them, only take ones you're interested in.
It didn't give a limit.
No, it didn't give a limit, but it also said that they don't have enough books for everybody, so please be kind. I took 4, and Elliot took...
A couple more.
Like, yeah, 7.
6.
Oh, you said 7, okay.
No, you initially said 7. I'm like, yeah, each.
I took 4, and but it was really cool.
I took the ones that actually seemed like I would be interested.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yes. There were some bookmarks there. There were some other advertisements.
I took 2 bookmarks.
For an upcoming con, also in the Bay Area. So we got there early. We actually got there half hour earlier than we needed to. Not because we meant to, just because of the way our schedule worked out. As Elliot said, he woke up at 5:30 to get to my house by...
About 7.
You did get here a little after 7. Basically, he wanted to get here by 7 so we can go get some breakfast and be at the con right on time at 9. We got there around 8:35 or so.
You know, just totally off topic. I hate the word con in that sense. It's a convention. Just say convention. I don't know why that bugs me.
It's such a conventional term for convention now, though. Anyway, and we get there and there's... absolutely not a single person on the con floor.
No, I think a janitor walked by.
He might have been a janitor or at least someone who worked there, though.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, what's going on? And we walked over to the table and it says registration starts at 10. Mind you, because of daylight savings time last night, we're both like really tired. Elliot woke up at the equivalent of 4:30. I woke up at the equivalent of 5:30. And so it was just kind of like, we didn't have to get up and get here at this time. Are you serious? But it turns out that no, we were right. The first panel, we are the ones who only travel.
Funny thing is, because we were joking around, saying in the elevator, saying, "Yeah, we should go, you know, to the bar," and you were like, "Yeah, sure." I'm like, I was kidding. And you're like, oh, no, I meant later. And then after we find out, it's like, oh, we're here early.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe. Okay, so it's 8:45. It doesn't start till 10. Maybe we should just go to the bar.
I know. We did contemplate it if we were actually going to be there that long. But anyway, so about 8:50 or so, some people walked in and... we were able to register then, and we got into the first one. Like I said, we are the ones who only travel. And what this was about was a generational ship, spaceship, meaning a multi-generational spaceship. And the idea behind this is that, you know, we're heading somewhere that's going to take a lot of years to get to. they said, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 50 years or 500 years or 5,000 years. It's multiple generations are going to be aboard this ship. Now, you think about, well, 50 years, it's not multiple generations, but you figure the average person who gets on board, you know, is going to be someone smart. They're going to be scientists. They're going to be, you know, top of their field. So they're going to be...
Generally, I mean, they did touch on other things like the selection process.
Yeah, of course. But you're going to need the people to run the ship. You're going to need the people to be able to take care of the planet once they get there.
People have something to offer.
Yeah. So, but, you know, most of those people are going to be in their 30s. Or later?
Yeah, probably.
So you figure you add 50 years to that.
Yeah, they're not. A lot of them won't survive the trip.
Yeah, and they're going to be
educators.
They're going to be 75 to anywhere to from dead? 75 to dead. Yeah. So you know, even though it's only 50 years, it's still, you know, that's most likely there's going to be another generation born who never seen Earth, and that's a very abstract concept to think about.
Well, there would have to be another generation, otherwise you're just going to get there with a bunch of, you know, old men and old women that can't reproduce. So I was like, all right, this was fun.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what the concept is. Or you know, go farther, like 500 years or 1,000 years or whatever. And you know, you keep reproducing and until you get to the planet. Elliot brought up a good point.
That's where I have a pretty big problem with that.
Go ahead and say what you told me.
Okay, so the big thing about that is to imagine, let's say you are part of this group that's traveling there, and let's just, for easy sake of the argument, it's a 200-year trip. And you were born on this ship, and it will still be at least 100 years till you get there. So you, in this case, if you are a passenger on the ship, you will be born and you will die on this ship.
Yeah.
Your only real purpose is to procreate. And I think that would have a pretty tremendous psychological effect on people when they come to that realization that it's that their life has no real purpose other than to reproduce. It doesn't. I mean, sure, they could become educators and educate the future generations, but ultimately, their life is just a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And I think having that realization that, like, oh, wow, my life really does not... Like, sure, I do have some importance, but I'm just not really that important. Yeah. I don't really have that much of a purpose. I'm just like, well, I don't... For that to actually happen... Because there's bound to be someone to have that realization if they are on this ship.
Especially if you're talking about, you know, five... or more generations, because, you know, if you're that first generation, first born on there, you're going to be like, wow, I'm the first kid born, or one of the first kids born in outer space. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the first kids born on this trip. But then it's like, their sons, or their sons and daughters, like their grandchildren, they're going to be like, well, what am I? You know?
Right. I mean, ultimately, yeah, it's like, will they really be remembered? And... So, I mean, I'm not a history major. History is actually generally one of my worst subjects, but can you name a single person that was on the Mayflower?
No.
I can't.
No.
They were important people.
Yeah.
To the, you know, the way the country is now, and that they were necessities. But for the most part, I'm sure, you know, there are plenty of records.
Oh, yeah.
And I just can't think of a single one. But I would assume that most of the population of the United States would agree that they are largely forgotten.
And I think that's...
At least as far as individuals.
I think that, yeah, I think that's in general. Because you think about, let's go to World War II or World War I. Can you think of anybody... I mean, yeah, you can think. You might be able to think of some generals.
Hitler.
Well, yeah, of course.
I've heard him.
But I'm talking about the fighters, the frontline men. Uh-huh. You know,
right.
There's monuments to them with their names on it. But do we know any of their names? No. And that's kind of the same thing. It's a different situation.
It's completely different because they weren't born with the realization of just, hey, I'm just a stepping stone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this adventure, so this exploration thing can continue.
But what I mean is the impact of a single person on humanity is generally very small. There is exceptions. You know, you have like Hitler and like Gandhi and even Martin Luther King, more recent. And so you do have those individuals. But if you can name all the individuals that are household names in each generation, it's only a few. And we have, you know, how many people born every 10 years, every 20 years is like a lot. So, you know, and I'm just saying how the a single name, a single human name is not something that usually leaves an impact on humanity. And so that's the same thing. It's like the name, like, oh yeah, the starship, the name of the starship would stay in everyone's mind.
Okay, just like the Mayflower.
Yeah, exactly. The concept of what they did, the struggles they went through would probably be there. Like, and I'm sure there will be stories out there written about the middle generations. Mm-hmm. But you're right, the individual names would probably be something that you can only find in a history book or on the plaque, on a special plaque somewhere. Right.
I just think this is a slightly different circumstance because I think...
It definitely is.
But. Well, yeah, because in, like, normal real life, you know, people aren't really... I don't think most people are kind of concerned with that. Not even really concerned, but don't come to that realization. Because you can kind of come to that conclusion that a lot of us are just stepping stones for future generations.
That's very true.
But I think in a closed environment, like a spaceship, that realization is much stronger.
But we think that because we're from the planet. So now, and someone did bring this up during the panel, but it wasn't talked about too much. Will they really feel like that? Because they were born with knowing nothing else. So it's like a farmer mm-hmm. who has a kid.
So they just don't know a different life.
Here's a good example. Amish, mm-hmm. who are not so much anymore because now a lot of times they are adapting a little more technology. They're branching out a little bit. But think about Amish, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. They're born in their own little community.
Right.
And sure, they might peek outside mm-hmm. during their, you know, teenage, when the passage, rite of passage thing. Not all Amish people do that, but they generally just adopt what their parents were doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, think about it. That's generation after generation. So that's more of a... But still, to them, that's normal. That's what they're supposed to do. And sure, there's going to be those ones. And you see a lot of Amish people leave the Amish country. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a good comparison rather than the other one I had.
The only thing about that I'm not in complete agreement with is that I would assume... For these travelers, they would be well aware in the form of essentially media, or like, you know, books, you know, movies, whatever they have along with them, as something to remind them or teach about where they came from.
They would have to be.
So, yeah. So, whereas like Amish, they, from my understanding, kind of, you know, push the outside world away from them.
Yeah, and
where these travelers right. are keeping it with them.
And they would have to be, because once that zero generation mm-hmm. is gone,
yeah,
then there will be nobody from Earth there, right. and there will be no one to teach them.
Yeah, they need to know where they came from and why they're doing this.
Yeah, and that's a human trait also, speaking about humanity and stuff, is passing down stories. So I think mm-hmm. that would be fine.
Okay, well, I was going to say, that kind of leads me into a few of the things that I kind of took note of, which I kind of question the plausibility of some of this, especially if you are bringing along all these reminiscent, like, forms of media, artifacts, whatever, like art, books, mm-hmm. whatever, with you on the trip, that... Will it inspire or encourage human nature in the sense of... Well, okay, so one of the things that they talked about is, like, you know, it's the type of society would be very, like, you know, put the society first and then the individual second. Mm-hmm. The thing I kind of question about this is, like, how well would that work? Can they really have a community for even 50 years, 50 plus years, that's not chaotic, there's no anarchy, there's a sense of purpose, there has to be some form of government, even if it's just social contracts, not necessarily an actual acting government. Mm-hmm. But can you really have a, you know, journey like that and really not have any social problems?
Well, let's specify that during the panel, they had talked about the least amount of people that would be sent on this type of ship is about 500.
Yeah.
So that's a good amount. I mean...
Yeah, and I would assume at least one of them is going to disagree with another person.
Because the idea that popped in my head when you were saying this is, like, native tribes.
Right.
Is, you know, they have, like, the elder who is command, and everybody listens to the elder, and they definitely have a sense of community first and singularity second. But then I thought about it, that's usually a town of, like, or a tribe of, like, 20 or 50.
Yeah, but you know, even then, does every single person agree with what's going on? And if they don't, do they leave?
Usually if, they, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, if you're on a ship, you know, that's, you know, not really near anything else, you can't really just leave.
Yeah. That's a good point. Definitely something, and I don't have an answer for that, obviously.
Well, yeah, that's one really, not, I wouldn't say loophole, but really one kind of thing that kind of ate at me a little bit, because, you know, I mean, I don't want to be too pessimistic, but, you know, human nature in history has not generally gone too well as far as just, you know, having peaceful relationships among groups of people for extended amounts of time.
Yeah, definitely. So let's get into a little bit of the science behind the generational, the science fiction, because it's definitely science fiction at this point, of the generational ship. They talked about genetic screening.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, at first, they were kind of like, well, you would have to screen for genetics and make sure that you got rid of any genetics.
Defects.
But then someone in the audience who, I think she was, maybe she was a biologist? I don't remember. Or psych, so I don't know. But anyway, she was in the science, she was a science person. Sounds horrible. And she brought up the point that just because it's bad on Earth doesn't mean it's going to be bad for the mission. I forgot.
As far as what, having diversity?
Well, yeah, for one, diversity, but also she brought up, I forgot what trait it was, but it's a trait that, you know, on Earth, it might make a person kind of not accepted, but mm-hmm. that same trait up there, when something goes wrong, they might be the only one that can actually concentrate and fix the problem. I forgot what disorder it was.
Yeah, they were saying, like, the people that are, I guess, a little more used to chaos.
Yeah.
In a chaotic situation, they're probably the most level-headed people.
Yeah. But then also diversity with the genetics, and it's like, you want to bring the most diverse group as possible. You don't want, you know, you don't want, like, a whole family of, like, 5 or 10 taking up, you know, 1/5 of the spaceship, because, blood relatives, I mean, because they're all going to have the similar genes, and then that's going to, you know, dilute the gene pool. So you want to have the biggest diversity, you want to have the most races, you want to have the most, you know, everything possible. Genetic screening might actually be counterintuitive. Now, they did say, though, there is some things that are extremely negative that they could screen out. I'm bad with genetics, so I don't know any of the diseases that are genetic. But they had talked about, like, there's certain ones that there's absolutely no benefit. It's like, it's in your genetics, but as soon as it manifests itself...
Well, I mean, you could probably say something like heart disease.
Heart disease, yeah.
Or, you know, diabetes. If, you know, diabetes tends to run in your family, then that might not be a good quality to have.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know,
it's genetic... It's like, oh, what does your family bring? Oh, you know, we have a tendency to be, you know, to have very long lives. What about you, your family? Oh, we tend to be diabetic.
Yeah, exactly. And so, genetic screening can be good, but you gotta plan it right, because you're not looking for the most defect-free genetics. You're looking to get rid of the genetics that have no benefit and then bring the biggest diversity.
Here's kind of an interesting thing. I kept thinking of looking at more from the more of a diverse like immunity to certain things.
That,
like,
too.
So I kind of based this, I can't remember what YouTube channel was. I want to say it was SciShow,
mm-hmm.
where I guess, like, the whole kind of, like, subconscious quote mating rituals of humans, and, like, how pheromones play a role, is essentially the pheromones kind of give a idea of what the genetic makeup of your potential mate is. Okay. Like, oh yeah, this potential mate is, you know, has a lot of these resistances to things that you don't have resistances to. So if the two of you mate, your children will have, like, the best of both worlds.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's what I kept thinking of when they kept talking about diversity. There's a car alarm going off, isn't there?
Oh, well. We'll just play through.
Game on.
So, yeah. So, yeah, and so that's, the genetics are definitely something to, that they, that would have to be considered both ways, both what kind of genetics are good and to keep and what are not. A few of the, so, they brought up education. They brought up the concept of, you know, we're humans, and humans are built and evolved to live on Earth. We are not built and evolved to live in space. So, we're, you know, our human nature has a lot to do with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they brought up the fact of teaching humans to be human.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we take for granted, because as a parent, you know, when you bring a child into this world, they see it all around them. But they won't be seeing it all around. They won't know anything about, you know, psychology, basically, of being a human. And so I wrote down education for humanity itself, teaching humans to be humans, and what that takes may be difficult. And I'm not going to touch on that one too much, but basically, you know, like, it's a concept of, we know what it's like to, you know, fall mm-hmm. off of stairs.
That's, right, there are just some things that you cannot experience in a spaceship, you know, on a trip like that. That, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of physical things you can never experience in that situation, and but not just the physical aspect, but the emotional aspect of it too.
I mean, like they were also saying, what about, you know, knowing the, like, what's up and what's down? Now, granted, these ships would have gravity.
Right, yeah, they use...
The ship itself would be a donut shape, and it would be moving in a circle to create gravity. But, you know, they would have no sense of horizon, they would have no sense of, you know, distance, depth, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be interesting too, you know, and it's like, we don't know what it's like, if we go 3 or 4 generations in this thing, and humans adapt to that and evolve to fit their situation.
More in a sense, devolve.
Well, in a sense, but it's definitely an evolution to fit the situation. What about when they reach the planet and now, you know, they're on solid ground for the first time and they're looking out over the horizon? They can't comprehend that. Now, granted, psychologists predict that part of humanity will come back to them. Not necessarily that generation that first lands, but the generation that's born on that planet. But what happens if it doesn't, you know? What happens if all of a sudden...
Keep that donut spinning.
Yeah, or I was thinking all of a sudden humans have to go into caves on this planet and live mm-hmm. in caves. Now, that's kind of where humans started.
Right.
Somewhat, on and this planet, so...
Yeah, I think humans would be able to readapt.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, like, yeah. I mean, it kind of depends on how long the journey is. If we're talking, like, 5,000 years... You know, that may take a little while to undo, but if we're talking just a couple generations, I don't think it'll be that big of a deal.
So, before we move off of this panel, I have a question for you. What movie did you think of, or are you thinking of, when we think about a multi-generational spaceship?
Oh, jeez. You know, okay, so, kind of funny, one of the audience members, which... I don't think we really discussed was that. That's not what I pictured a convention panel to be like. Just the etiquette.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like more of a discussion.
That's true. This particular panel was more of a Q&A, more of a like ask questions and discuss it. It was like almost like everybody in the audience was a panel member too.
Yeah,
it was very unorganized. They were very unprepared. One of the panelists even got there 10 minutes before it was over with a major hangover.
Yep. So, wait, what was your question again?
Thinking about the multi-generational spaceship.
Okay, so, yes. One of the members, one of the people in the audience mentioned Michio Kaku. He's a physicist and a teacher at New York City College?
I'm not sure, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's on the History Channel a lot. And I remember I'm pretty sure he has done a couple documentaries,
mm-hmm.
Or History Channel has done.
Yeah,
it has done a couple of documentaries involving him.
Michio,
whatever.
I'm just saying, for people.
Okay. And So, if anything, that's it made me think directly to that the entire time. I don't really remember anything about the documentary, but that's the only thing that really came to mind. Because I can't really think of any movie that really has any, like... Well, okay, that's not entirely true. I kind of think of WALL-E a little bit.
I was just... That's what I think the whole time.
The story's a little bit different.
But yeah, okay, but it tackles Earth dying.
All right.
Humans needing to leave.
Uh-huh.
And the ship was created for generation after generation to keep humanity alive and safe until a time where they either find another planet that's livable or Earth re-terraforms itself to be habitable again.
Uh-huh.
And that's the concept of WALL-E. Well, the spaceship in WALL-E. And so the reason it goes wrong is because of the computer, and I don't remember exactly why. I know the computer's doing it because it thinks it's helping humanity, I think. I don't...
Uh-huh.
It's been a while since I've seen WALL-E. But what it comes down to is, you know...
We might have to do some research.
I know.
By watching the movie.
What it comes down to is you have WALL-E, which I think it was like 5,000 years or something like that. It was a long time. They had forgotten that...
It was long enough.
They had forgotten that they ever were on the planet.
Right.
And they had forgotten their mission. They had forgotten...
Right. Now that I remember, think about it, it did show, like... multiple generations of captains.
Yeah. And then
So they were there for at least a few hundred years.
Yeah, it was definitely a few hundred years. I think it was more than that. And it also, like, they had a database mm-hmm. of all the you know, basically the YouTube.
Right. Now, if you want to really go down the rabbit hole, we got, you know, also explore how it's a lot of... All the inhabitants turn into consumers.
Yeah.
And, you know, to kind of draw on some of the things I've had to explore in English, it's kind of like the whole Eddie Bernays thing where, you know, the masses need to be controlled because they're going, you know, and getting them to buy the things that they don't need, and
you know
it
what?
Just becomes a giant shopping mall.
I think this is obviously a very fantastic subject and one that we could spend a whole podcast on.
Fine, cut me off. Whatever, I don't care.
Whatever. And I think that this is something we will retouch on in the future. I think this is something we can bring back up as another episode. Before we, you know, get finished with this episode, I do want to talk about the last panel.
Okay.
So before we get to our opinions of the last panel, first of all, it's getting around the speed of light. And this one was much more formal and,
planned it actually out. Seemed like a panel.
They had someone on the panel that was leading the discussion. Name was...
It wasn't just that. It was also the fact that the audience members weren't just, you know, jumping in. It's like, oh, I'm just going to start talking.
But
now.
I think that they did that in the first one because the two panelists were just kind of like sitting there.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so the four panelists was Alfred Nash, who is a scientist for NASA. He's actually working on an engineer, I think, for NASA, actually. He's working on non-manned space vehicles right now, although he truly believes in manned vehicles. Nancy Jane Moore, which I'm not sure her specialty was.
No, I don't remember.
Michelle Moraine, who was a biologist, and Jim Pekarik.
Yeah.
And he's a writer, and
I found him to be most interesting.
Well, he was in both of our panels.
Yeah,
was definitely most interesting.
I definitely am interested in the book he's writing.
Yeah, but the reason he was on both panels is because he's writing a book about light speed and that has multi generational travel, space travel. So those are the four, and Nancy Jane Moore was the one actually running like the discussion, really. She was the one who kind of, you know, started it, and she would continue on every question and kind of wrap it up, push things forward, and I think that's why this panel worked so much better.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I thoroughly enjoyed this panel. I was into this panel for almost the whole hour and 15 minutes. As were the first panel, I kind of... checked out a little bit towards the end, mainly because of what we talked about, where it was kind of like the audience and the panel members were just going back and forth and everything.
Right.
But you, on the other hand, you...
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. I found the topic for the first panel of the generational traveling more interesting, but I didn't really appreciate the environment as much because, again, it didn't feel like a panel. It just felt like a group discussion and everyone was chiming in, which...
We should have been in a circle.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. Like, this isn't... For my very first panel, for my very first convention, that is not what I imagined it to be. Yeah. And the second panel was kind of what I had a better idea of, where the people that are doing the most talking are the panelists, which I think is what it should be. No offense to any of the audience members, but I didn't go there to listen to the audience. I went there to listen to the panelists.
Yeah, same here. And I think that's what... got to me in the first one. There was a lot of great information.
Yeah, I mean, the topic, I love. I love the topic.
Yeah, I love the topic of the first one. It got me thinking about a lot. And I forgot to mention a book recommendation. Well, you know what? No, you know what? I'm going to use that for my pick.
There you go. Okay.
All right. I hadn't had a pick yet. So, all right. So anyway, so the second one was much more structured, much more audience ask question, panelists discuss. It's called Getting Around the Speed of Light, as I mentioned. And this is basically the concept of, like, in reality, we're probably never going to get to the speed of light, let alone surpass the speed of light. Not only is there a lot of problems with getting to the speed of light, but surpassing the speed of light is just pretty much impossible.
The panelists said they hate when, you know, people say something's impossible, because totally prove
that. Well, I agree with that. That's why I said...
I have an open mind, man.
Almost impossible. But it's true. I mean, the physics behind... So the physics and logistics behind FTL, faster than light traveling, are... It just won't work. There's no way. Sure, you can make up... not make up, I shouldn't use that word. You can... Find new theory. You can have new theories that allow you to go FTL, but again, those are unproven theories. One of the quotes that Alfred Nash said through the whole thing that really stuck with me, it was "absence of evidence is not evidence of absence," and it really I had to think about that because it's like absence of evidence meaning if there's no way to prove it, that doesn't mean it's not true. Right. It just means that you haven't proved it.
Right.
And so he, even though he's the one saying that faster than light travel is impossible, he said, it's impossible with today, you know, what we know today. Mm-hmm. But...
Which, I mean, so I don't know a ton about, you know, physics. I'm not going to be taking physics until next quarter. But the little bit I know about speed of light, and if anything, I think there's a Vsauce episode about the premise of the episode is if you're in a massless vehicle traveling at the speed of light, what happens when you turn on your headlights?
It would...
Because if you're already traveling at the speed of light...
Well, okay, so then that goes to one of the theories, the...
speed of light
Oberth plus, effect.
Okay.
The Oberth effect is essentially if you're going... Let's just use 100 miles an hour as a base. You're going 100 miles an hour, and you shoot a rocket that goes 100 miles an hour. That rocket is going to now be going 200 miles an hour with drag and stuff, you know, but let's just keep the number simple. So that 100 mile an hour rocket is now going 200 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah, because if you're going 100 miles an hour and the rocket is supposed to go 100 on its own, that rocket is now going to be... Adding 100 to the...
Some reason, I don't feel that's completely accurate.
No, it's not. It's not. But I'm just using simple numbers for the sake. It would have drag. It would have slowdown. It would be going faster than it should be able to on its own. Than it would be able to on its own.
I don't know. I haven't taken physics yet, so I could be totally wrong here. But I don't know. Just something in my head's telling me. That doesn't sound actually very accurate.
No, it is. This is the Oberth effect is something that's proven with rockets.
Okay. I guess I'll have to wait till I take physics next quarter.
Yeah. And so basically, I don't know if light reacts the same way, because, you know, as we know, light is not just is different. It's not just a particle. It's not just a wave. It's both. I believe that's light. I hope so. So anyway. So I don't know if light would react like this, but essentially, if you're going at the speed of light and you turn on your headlights, then that means that light is now going faster than the speed of light. Now, I don't know if that works with light, but it's the
in of itself doesn't really make sense then. Because how can light be going faster than the speed of light? And then what would happen? Because that means that those light particles are accelerating faster than what's actually being illuminated. So how does that even work?
Yeah, I don't know. But then,
I don't think I'm going to do well in physics next quarter.
You probably won't be learning about this stuff in physics.
I hope not. They all learn about roller coasters and inertia. And
so,
I don't know.
One way that they talked about essentially FTL being possible is with negative mass. And what negative mass is basically you're taking the space in front of you and throwing it behind you. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually moving fast. You're moving the space around you.
Well, okay, so the way I kind of interpret that, though, is, which I know they didn't really explain it this way, but from my understanding, light has no mass. And that's why anything with mass cannot be at the speed of light, because the more massive something is, the more energy it takes to propel it forward. And since light has no mass, then it's the fastest thing. So if you have negative mass, then if that with that logic, that means it weighs, or it's not weighs, it's less massive than light, which means it would go faster. That's how I'm perceiving it.
That,
which they didn't say it that way, so I don't know.
No, but that makes sense. Just to correct, not correct, because it's not wrong, but just to go on top of what something you said is, there are things that travel faster than light. It's just information cannot be passed faster than light.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of this is there are things in our universe that transfer no information that are faster than light. They didn't give any examples, but anything that transfers information. Now, this could be anything. It could be anything like DNA, anything like that. So, humans, for example, cannot travel that fast. Rock cannot travel that fast.
Not travel that fast and still live.
Yeah. You just disintegrate, is essentially. They were talking about...
Parts of you can travel that fast.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably.
Little bits and pieces.
Yeah. But basically, things can travel faster than light if they... transfer no information. And that is a weird concept, because it's like, well, if you know, everything is made out of DNA and all that, particles and stuff, then what is that? I don't know. But they were saying that there are
what
things...
What is no information?
Yeah. I didn't really understand that. I've heard that before, but I didn't really understand.
No, because if you think about it, like, then isn't everything in some form a form of information? So if it has something has no, how can something have no information? Because then wouldn't that just be nothing?
I don't know. So yeah, it just says,
I'm going to do so bad in physics. Oh god.
So it basically says that anything with non information can, like I said, pass faster than the speed of light.
But what is non information?
Yeah, I know. Oh, for example, shadows. Shadows pass no information. And think about it. If the sun is coming down on you, that sun is taking a long time to get to you because it's passing the UV rays and such.
Mm-hmm.
But the second you move, your shadow moves. And that's, the shadow is the sun reflecting, or you blocking the sun.
Isn't it just the absence of light?
Basically, but it's still moving faster than the speed of light. Because think about it, if it didn't move faster than light, when you moved, your shadow would still be there until...
I like how you're an English major and understand this better than I do.
I like science fiction.
Oh,
so geez. There you go. I remember hearing about that your shadow moves at the faster than the speed of light. So that's a good example. All right, some other things. Something that really, really I found amazingly awesome that I had heard before, but never in the context of a scientist or a professional saying it, is that gravity is not reconciled by quantum physics. Meaning, gravity doesn't fit into the law of physics. And we don't understand gravity. I never realized that we didn't understand gravity. Because we can manipulate gravity.
Take that, Isaac Newton.
Yeah. We can manipulate gravity. We have the technology to create artificial gravity in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, we don't truly understand gravity. And that's something that really kind of, out of all of this today, that's something that kind of shocked me. I'm like, I did not realize that gravity, because if you try to explain gravity with physics, with our current understanding of physics, they said that all of a sudden you'd have anomaly after anomaly that don't actually exist. So there's obviously something that we're missing.
I'm missing the gravity of this conversation.
So basically, there's some sort of link or something that explains gravity that we don't know yet. We don't understand. Right.
So it's the absence of evidence.
Exactly. And to put this all into a nice, neat little package.
Bottle?
Yeah. If, I truly believe that if humanity ever unlocks the true secrets, the true knowledge of physics, we will be able to, maybe not travel at the speed of light or faster than, but we will be able to do a lot of things that we consider today impossible. Transferring data quickly. Again, it might not be actually traveling, it might be some other version, but I truly think that physics can explain things like teleportation. And it will be possible to have a form of teleportation someday. I don't know if we'll ever go faster than the speed of light. I don't know if it's possible, even with a true understanding of physics. But I do think that humanity someday, maybe a thousand years from now, will be able to understand that and be able to travel across galaxies very quickly. I do have a few more quotes before we end it, before we get to our picks from today. Again, this is from Alfred Nash. He said, things are moving faster than the speed of light in the universe because the universe is expanding. That was another thing.
Yeah, I did get that in my notes, and I had a little bit of trouble wrapping my head around it. Like, I kind of get what he's getting at.
That goes back to the Oberth effect.
Mm-hmm.
If the universe is already expanding, and then something on the edge of that universe...
Right, okay, so if... Yeah, and that light is coming from that edge and being pulled away...
No. Okay, so this isn't... this is just a kind of like a general understanding of it. Let's say there's a rock on the very edge of our universe, right? Our universe is ever-expanding, so that rock is moving right at the edge of our universe, right? And then something happens that propels that. An explosion. Another rock collides in it and energy is transferred. So that rock is already going at the speed of light. So now that energy transfer propels that and is now going faster than the speed of light and goes outside of our universe. That is something I found really interesting. Nancy Jane Moore said, the future of... Why did I put vanity? Wow. The future... Mind you, I was typing this on my phone. The future of humanity may or may not be worth it.
Maybe you didn't mean vanity. She.
But yeah. It was... that was Nancy Moore.
Well, maybe you didn't mean
vanity. Oh, maybe I did, yeah. Well, and what she meant by this is she was talking about, well... You know, they were talking about, like... they got into, like... Well, do we really want to head outside of our planet? Or, you know, is our planet worth saving? And most of them were like, our planet's worth saving. We like it here, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, well, I truly believe that, you know, we will expand out there. And that might be our only survival. And then she went on to say, well, the future of humanity may or may not actually be worth saving.
Mm-hmm.
We may be, you know, the cockroach of the universe, for all we know.
You know, being that I had to recently rewatch The Matrix, there is a line in that I want to quote, that humans are a virus.
Yeah, exactly. So that covers our experience with the con today.
Convention.
Due to waking up so early and the fact that there was an hour and a half in between the second and third panel, and also the third panel wasn't too interesting to us. We did leave a little early. We went to the trade room.
Which
was really small and didn't have much.
Yeah.
Mostly books, and they weren't really...
And, like, some really expensive pictures.
Jewelry.
Yeah, just... that you're pretty sure would be a ripoff.
Yeah, I did see one thing I really liked. It was a scroll that you hang on the wall that had a picture of a dragon, books, and then dragon on top, and it was like bookworm protector, basically. Like, the dragon eats the bookworms, you know.
Yeah, I'm the wrong kind of nerd for that, to really appreciate that.
Yeah. But yeah, so we did leave early and came back, got some pizza, and had a good lunch. Now we're recording the podcast. So it's been a full day.
I'm so tired.
I know, we're both exhausted. So let's get to our off-topic picks. You can start for me.
All right. So, for my career and life planning class, I had to take a couple assessments. One is the Strong Interest Inventory, and the other is the MBTI, which is Myers-Briggs something.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Just call it Myers-Briggs test.
Yeah, or MBTI. So the point of these assessments were... Okay, so the point of the class, again, career and life assessment... Wait, CRL... Career and life planning is to... It's mainly geared towards people in college who... are not really sure about their major or just don't have a major. So the point of the assessments were to try... You had to answer a couple hundred questions, and it took your answers, broke down your personality type. So, for example, I'm... As a host of the podcast, I'm extremely introverted.
Uh-huh.
Oddly, you know, funny enough. And, you know, it breaks down some of my other personality traits. And it matches what my personality traits are with other people who have the same letters. So, again, for me, like, one of my letters is I, because I'm introverted. And compares it to those with the same letters and what their typical professions are. So, for me, it was actually very interesting because I am majoring in computer science. And computer science is one of the common majors for the people that share the same letters I have.
Okay.
But it brought up a lot of other interesting things. There's a lot of interesting things about myself that I didn't really think about. I mean, a lot of it were things that I kind of like thought about later. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, I like data. I like analyzing things. I like information. And, which is something I think I always knew kind of in the back of my head, but these assessments kind of helped. So, I highly recommend this for, generally for people that want to get a better understanding of themselves. It's kind of like, almost like a form of soul searching. Not quite, but especially very helpful if you're a college student or, you know, thinking about going back to college or just, you know, you're not really sure, you're at the point in your life where you're not really sure what you should be doing. Now, this isn't by any means like a guide, like, oh, you have these letters, you should be doing this. It's just, it just points out the things that are typical. Which, oddly enough, based off of my letters, my past professions were listed as the ones that are the worst matches for me. So, yeah, it's like, oh, okay, maybe that's why those professions don't work out for me, because it doesn't really match my personality type.
Yeah. Just a little bit on the test itself. I did take the test when I was in college. I think I took it in my ethics class. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that, but I know I took it been years now. I don't remember my letters. But it is Briggs-Meyer is the person who actually came up with the test.
Isn't it Myers-Briggs?
It says Briggs-Meyer on here. Briggs-Meyers. Isabel Briggs-Meyers. She's the one who actually came up with the test itself that we currently take. Now, it's based on Carl Jung's philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl Jung is a philosopher, semi-modern day, long gone now, but a lot younger, a lot newer than like Archimedes. Anyway, so it's a very interesting test that really has a lot of science behind it, and that's why it's used in a lot of college classes, especially when you're a freshman or sophomore and you're trying to kind of like figure out what you want to do in life.
You know, I think it's even if you're not in college and just
I agree.
For fun, you know, just to, you know, see, you know, it's just one of those little fun things just to kind of get a better idea of yourself.
There are websites that will give it to free for you for free.
Yeah, I had the website I had to use for school.
Yeah,
was I think for the two assessments cost me $33.
Yeah, I was gonna say. However, to get it professionally done, to get it the best quality, and to get the most feedback on your letters, it does cost.
Yeah, I got I think for the for both assessments, I think it was a total of about 25-page PDF.
Yeah,
so it went into a little bit of detail.
See, yeah, okay, so going back to the whole Myers-Briggs thing. So I'm reading one thing that, and I honestly, I don't know. One says Myers and Briggs. Mm-hmm. The other says Briggs-Myers is a name.
Well, I know it as the MBTI.
Okay, so...
And then, again, there's
also... I thought it was two different people, so...
I don't know, but then there's also the strong interest inventory.
Yeah, I don't know.
One's four letters, the other six letters.
Yeah. All right, so that's awesome pick. It's definitely something to check out if you're it's basically a personality. It's a very scientific personality test. That's what it's classified as.
Right.
So mine is we were speaking about the multi-generational starship traveling, and so my pick is a book this week, a series actually. It's called the Pathfinder series by Orson Scott Card. So I am going to warn that I am going to get into some spoilers right now. I'm not going to give anything super major away, but...
Spoilers in 5,
yeah.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Darth Vader's Luke's father.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to do it. I thought it was going to be... Almost relevant to what you were talking about.
That was almost... No, okay. So yeah, spoilers, though, because you can't really open by saying this is a multi-generational book and then talk about how it's set in a fantasy world. So the first book is set in a fantasy world. There are certain chapters that take place on the multi-generational starship. Long story short, not going to get into details... That there's it's not only a multi-generational, but it's also a multi-universal. There's multiple universes that all collide together on this planet by accident. It was a freak of physics, of science. And, yeah, it's really good. But it starts by this guy, this kid, who can see the paths of everybody who's ever walked on the land where he is. So he can literally see them walking, like a ghost of them. And he's a little kid, and his father dies, and this and that. And then he goes on this journey to... Because he finds out that he's, like, a prince, basically, of the kingdom. But then he finds out that the kingdom is only one of 16 bubbles of inhabitants on this planet. And then he finds out in each bubble is exact same people when they landed on the planet. Now, this is multiple generations already on this planet. So it's kind of like, it's a really, really weird, it's a sci-fi with fantasy. A lot of people got mad at him because the first book is pretty fantasy. It's like, oh, he's a prince and there's like a king, or there's a castle and, you know, there's magic and all this stuff. And then the second book, all of a sudden it's like, well, that's actually not true. It's all explained by science. They just don't remember things. And, you know, it's like genetics. And so people were kind of like, well, you took what was basically a fantasy novel and turned it into a science fiction novel in the second book.
How dare you change your work?
I know. I really liked the first two books. I own the third book, but it came out late last year, so I haven't actually had a chance to read it. The names of the books are Pathfinder, Ruins, and Visitors. The whole concept of the book, though, is that humanity is on its way. All of humanity. The whole of the planet Earth is on its way to inhabit this new planet. There's been no communication from this new planet back. And, like I said, something went crazy on the way there, and instead of a small colony colonizing this planet, the whole planet is colonized by 16 identical bubbles. So, what's humanity going to do when they find out? They're going to...
Kill everyone. Oh, I was kidding!
And...
Holy crap!
And restart, because... So that's like crazy. They're like, oh, they're no longer humans. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are no longer humans. To I forgot exactly how it happened, but to them, it was only supposed to be like 17 years or 40 years or something, but it had been like thousands of years that had passed. Huh. So it's a, because of it was basically like they went back in time. It had to do with the multi-universal thing. So it isn't just multi-generational straight up, but there is that aspect, and there's also the multi-generational on a new planet, and so it's a very interesting series that I suggest reading. Again, it's the Pathfinder series by Orson Scott Card. So that's it for our episode this week, and I hope you enjoyed it. It was a fun convention. I'm glad that we got to go. Probably won't go back next year.
So tired.
But and if we do, we're definitely not going at 9 a.m. on the day of daylight savings time. But I'm looking forward to some more upcoming cons in the area. Conventions.
Thank you.
I
was about to stab you with this pen.
I don't know which ones I'll go to. I don't know which ones Elliot will join me for. But definitely, I got a taste of this, and I liked the conversation. The people weren't the most... The people just weren't necessarily our type of people, but they were good people, and they liked to talk about their science fiction. Like it was absolutely real. And so I definitely want to go to some of the bigger conventions that have, you know, more bigger authors, meet maybe some authors I like and such like that. And so... But that's it for BayCon. BayCon, that's the one coming up, sorry. That's it for FogCon from us. Is there anything last minute you want to add?
I want to take a nap.
Yeah, me too. So if you want to get a hold of us, best way to do so is probably Facebook. Facebook.com/AlmostRelevantPodcast. You can also email us at AlmostRelevantPodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can find this episode of and all of our episodes, along with show notes and links and everything, at AlmostRelevantPodcast.com. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Soul Scribbler, and that's where I generally tweet about the show, and that's at SoulScribbler. I had to think about that for a second. Soul Scribbler. You can also look me up at Jeremy Collier. And that's about it for this week. So have a great week, and we'll see you in 2 weeks, as always.
Can you make some coffee?
Opening song with Our Wind in Our Sails, provided by Waleed Fighali. Ending song, Steampunk Girl, provided by John Emilio at johnemilio.com. And blast the cure and the snooze. It's a flask to her lips. Takes exit 22 and pulls in her parking space. Climbs up the fire escape. Steps into a bedroom and crashes onto a bed. Brings stockings from her leggings. She looks in the mirror and thinks that it's time to start another life. So she's putting on her goggles and a bowler hat. She checks her pocket watch and just a rocket back. She laces up her boots and puts her makeup on. She grabs her leather coat and her Tesla gun. But she used to be a gawker, now she's a stinger. Gaslight imagines taking a trip on a steam-powered ship. Instead, she opts to fly to a sci-fi convention. Now it's her intention to finish her novel, then go back to school and learn to live again. So she's putting on her goggles and a bowler hat. She checks her pocket watch, just a rocket back. She laces up her boots and puts her makeup on. She grabs her leather coat and a Tesla gun.
single.